Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. Today's guest is Amy Kilpin. Hello, Amy, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure, and I've heard a lot about you and seen a lot about you on social media and from my friend Colin at Raceskin, who is one of your sponsors.
Yep, he is indeed. I've been working with Raceskin for about a year.
Nice clothing.
Awesome kit. Yeah, really good.
Do you get some special Amy Kilpin designs then that you send to him and he makes for you?
I do, yes. They actually come up with the designs. I just send him all my myriad logos and they come up with some really funky designs.
Yeah, they do actually. And I had Kit Walker on last week, and Kit's also got a funky design for this year, I think, from Raceskin.
Yeah, I've seen that. Looks good.
Yeah, if you and we get all our SWAT kit from Raceskin as well, and so and if you go to the races and look closely, you'll see a lot of the Raceskin logos now on some of those flashy club kits that they do. It stands out quite a long way, doesn't it? Some of the stuff they do.
Yeah.
And you're a brand ambassador for Raceskin, aren't you? So what does that entail, being a brand ambassador?
I approached Colin, like I said, just maybe over a year ago now. And I think they were looking for some brand ambassadors at the time. So I contacted him. And yeah, we had a good conversation, actually. He was one of the first things he said to me was it was so refreshing to get an email where somebody actually offered him something. I think there's, a lot of people probably just write down what results they're getting and expect kit to be kind of, delivered to their door. But it was actually quite nice that he picked up on that, because, in my email I did sort of offer a series of benefits that the business would have as a result of working with me. So that was nice.
Yeah. Well, so talk us through your journey to where you're at now as a triathlete, because I'm looking at your website. You've had some reasonably impressive results. You're what I would call, if this is no offense, a good age grouper. Would you categorize yourself as a good age grouper, or would you categorize yourself as an elite age grouper?
No, I still kind of call myself an average age grouper.
Oh, right. So I've been complimentary there then.
Yeah, no, I'm honoured that you think I'm a good age grouper. It's been quite a hard struggle for me, really. I didn't do any sport at school. I used to horse ride, so that was about as sporty as it got, really, for me. I started full-time work in 2008 when I left university. And I kind of thought, I can't just do this for the rest of my life, just, 9 to 5, that's not fulfilling enough. So I started to do other stuff. And actually part of that was going up mountains, and I learned rock climbing, and I did a bit of running just to keep fit. And I met somebody up a mountain, actually, who said to me, oh, you should do a marathon. And I said, absolutely no way. Like, humans aren't designed to run 26 miles. That's just wrong.
No, I agree.
So and she said, well, just enter like a 10K race or something. And I said, what's the point? I wouldn't win. And she was like, oh, no, that's not the point. The point is you take part to have fun. And I just kind of gave her a weird look and disregarded it. But I think about 6 months after that, I entered a 10K in Battersea Park in London, took the train down on my own. And it felt really big, I went down and did this 10K run, and obviously I didn't win, but it was quite enjoyable. So I ended up kind of building up the distances, really, and I did a half marathon and in over 2 hours or something, very unimpressive. And then I did eventually do a marathon and didn't actually find it as horrendous as I expected. So I did a few more just kind of really for the experience. I wasn't ever in a million years, I didn't dream I'd do this as a competitive thing. I just kind of did them around Europe and thought, I kind of got a bit bored of marathon running. It's a bit of a monotonous training regime, 6 days a week. So I entered a triathlon for the next challenge, and it was the London Tri. And I couldn't swim front crawl at all. I could when I was a kid, but you know, you don't do it for 25 years or whatever, and it's lost. So I swam breaststroke, but I didn't even put my face in the water because I thought the London Docklands was disgusting. So I luckily I don't think I was last, but yeah, just did that, tick the box. It was a sprint, and then ended up building up to Olympic distance. But after I did a couple of Olympic distance triathlons, I was actually last out of the water by a long way. Had the, you know, the canoe kayak guy accompanying me out of the water, and they were closing down bike aid stations.
Oh dear.
As I was last on the bike because I was so slow on the swim. So yeah, it was fun.
What year was that when you did your first one then?
So that was 2012.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, and
so you've been on that journey then, on the triathlon journey for the last 6 years, really.
Yeah, it's flown by.
Wow, and you're up. Is this your first? You said you've got Ironman Austria coming up in 4 weeks. Then is that your first Ironman?
No, I actually did. So after my pretty horrific experience of doing a few Olympic distance triathlons, I decided to do a half Ironman. But at the time, I was still really bad at swimming, so I was taking adult swim classes. And a little while after that, I did do my first half Ironman. And after that, I obviously decided to do an Ironman. So this was 2013, end of August 23rd, September 2013. I did my first Ironman at Bolton, and then I did the European Long Distance Championships at Challenge Almere in 2014. So I've done two, but not for quite a few years. And I'd say I've improved a fair bit since then. So it'll be interesting to see.
Well, I'm looking at your results here, Amy. In that Almere race, you were third in your age group and you did a 106 swim. So that's not bad for 3.8K, having come from a background of not being able to swim much and being last out of the water. That would give a lot of people hope. Ironman UK, 10th in your age group.
I don't think these age groups were massively competitive at the time. I was in the 25, 29 age group. It wasn't disastrous. I was pleased to go sub 12. I mean, sub 12 was my goal at Almere for my second Ironman. So I managed to tick that box.
So you, I'm looking, I mean, you can only race who turns up. You know, in Malaysia, you were third in your age group. In Gdynia, you were second. In Puli, you were fourth. In Luxembourg, on Vietnam, you were fourth. 70.3 South Africa, you were 10th. So you're up there in the top 10. You got to the World Championships in 2016 in 70.3 Worlds. So you're sort of living the dream a bit, really, aren't you?
Yeah, I managed to get to the 70.3 World Champs 3 years running.
Right.
So I was quite chuffed to achieve, really. When I qualified for the first one, I just thought, this is ridiculous. You know, I really did start out from nothing. And I know, you know, you get these kind of progenies that come out of nowhere and just suddenly win races and say they've never done a triathlon before. And I have full respect for those very talented people. But I mean, I can honestly say I have no natural talent. I've just had to work really, really hard. And I do just you know, commit really and work as hard as I can. And I know I'm still a long way off where I want to be. But then I guess your goalposts always change as you progress through the sport.
Well, they do.
I mean, it is an exciting journey, really.
And if this was one of the normal triathlon podcasts, we'd take a deep dive into what swim training you've done and what bike training you do and how you've made progress here and how you intend to get to the next step. But actually, I don't want to really focus on that. What I want to focus on is what we were talking about at the beginning about how somebody who's, you know, as you said yourself, I think you probably got a little bit more talent than you're giving yourself credit for, but you're not winning these age groups by a huge margin. You're not getting on the podium at the World Championships, and yet you still have a raft of sponsorships there. You've got There looks like there's about a dozen people, maybe 15 that are 15 or 16 that are represented on your website. Each of them with a nice little biog about how lucky you are to be supported by them and what they offer, which is better than some of the professional triathletes I see. You do a lot on social media. I made a quick note, actually. I hope you don't think I'm stalking you, but you've got over 4,000 friends on Facebook and 1,800 people following. You've got 2,000 followers on Instagram. You've got over 4,000. You've got over 4,400 followers on Twitter. And you've got this lovely website here, and you get some very nice photographs with your lovely smiling face on each of them. So that's always good. And you write some nice blogs, and you do some good stuff for your sponsors. So you made mention of how you approached Raceskin, and that Colin from Raceskin was impressed with the fact that you opened your contact with him by offering what you could do for them, rather than just saying, "Hey, I'm Amy. I've come fifth in my age group. I've been to the World Championships. What can you give me?" And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are perhaps in your position who are wanting help and support from local companies or national companies, but they perhaps just go about it in the wrong way. So that was what I was hoping we could dig into. How did you get into this lifestyle thing of traveling abroad to do your triathlons, working with these companies? And as I say, it looks like you're living the dream, really.
So yeah, it's quite an interesting story, actually. All of it happened by accident. So I did my first Ironman in 13 hours or whatever, nothing impressive at all. And after that, I had a conversation with my coach at the time and said, "How do I get better? How do I, you know, go sub 12? And he said, "Well, you need a better bike." You know, I did the Ironman on a Cannondale road bike, entry level. It was about £700, which I thought was really expensive at the time. And with, you know, kind of clip on aero bars, and I've got some hilarious photos of it. But and I said, "Well, I can't afford a bike." At the time, I was working full time as a marketing, digital marketing executive. And he said, "Well, you've got to, you know, try and get a sponsored one." And I just laughed at him. I said, "Are you joking? Who would sponsor me?" And he said, "Oh, well, you know, you never know. Just, you know, try your local bike shop, maybe." And I went away and thought he was absolutely off his head, because it was just so absurd what he'd just suggested to me. And there actually, a week later, I was at work and we were approached by a new bike shop that was setting up in a local town where we had a site for the company I worked for. So I thought, well, I've already kind of started a conversation with them in the work context. So I thought I'd reach out to them just to see, as they're a new bike shop, whether they would want to get a bit more publicity, you know, in the women's, for women, not because I'm any good at triathlon, but I contacted them and said, "Are you looking for anyone to kind of, you know, potentially raise the profile of women's cycling?" This was, you know, back in 2013, 2014, and women's cycling was really, really low. Yeah. I think it's increased exponentially in the past few years, which is great to see. So, yeah, I had a conversation. I went in and I couldn't believe when he replied to my email and said, "Yeah, we're interested. Come and have a chat." And I sat there and looked at him and I said, "You do realize I'm never going to win a race in my life." And he said, "That's fine. You know, we don't want you just to win races. We just want to get women in the town and the surrounding area more interested in riding bikes. So if you can, you know, be a sort of an ambassador for women cycling locally, then we'd love to work with you." So they provided me with a bike, and off the back of that, I thought, "Oh wow, I wonder whether any other local businesses would potentially be interested in supporting me." So I contacted a local physiotherapist and they said, yeah we'd love to. And it really just spiraled from there. So it's quite a funny story. I just thought it was, I was fluking it, to be honest.
So there's a couple of things that stand out for me there. One, you took a chance, even though you didn't think you didn't have the confidence in yourself. You took a chance and went for it. And of course, you know, it never, most people aren't offended if you ask. And the worst that can happen is somebody says no, but you gave it a go, and you had a different angle in that, rather than just saying, "I'm doing a triathlon, and I'd like a bike, and can you help me?" You went along the lines of, "Would you be interested in promoting women in cycling?" So that's two things there that stand out for me. Then you have these other sponsors. So Most people think that sponsorship might be about somebody giving them a bundle of cash to help pay for their expenses to get to the World Championships in a faraway place. I suspect that in your case, that's not true with all of your sponsors. Does anybody give you any cash on the first?
I've had a little bit of funding over the last couple of years, but it's very small scale. Okay. So yeah, the rest of it's just kit.
But that helps, doesn't it?
Services. Amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's been indispensable because, like I said at the time, I was working full time and I could barely scrape together enough money for an entry fee. So yeah, I mean, it's been amazing. And actually, a lot of the businesses that I started working with in the early days, I'm still working with now. So I really like remaining loyal to brands. So there has to be a pretty significant reason why I wouldn't work with the brand anymore, or maybe they wouldn't want to work with me anymore. And some of them have chopped and changed a little bit, but I would say that the majority I've worked with for quite a few years.
Right. So it's about loyalty. Do you look for people where you like the way they do business and sort of the way that if they're ethical or the way they promote themselves and choose them, or are you really just after somebody? I see you sponsored, for instance, by Zone 3 for wetsuits. So do you just fire off an email to all of the wetsuit companies and see what comes back?
I mean, in the early days, I probably was a bit less choosy, you know, I mean, at that point, and you're just kind of trying to get as much support as you can. But nowadays, definitely not. I mean, over the years, I've learned quite a lot. I've never been a sponsored athlete in my life before this experience. So, you know, you learn about stuff along the way. And also, you know, my experience in marketing has evolved. But you know, one of the things I don't like to see now is people who just use brands because I'm on the other side. You know, I work as a brand marketer. I don't like people that just want to get free stuff. Yeah. So even in the early days, I would never work with somebody or a brand where I wasn't interested in their product. You know, I've been offered stuff over the years. I think this company approached me a couple of years ago saying, you know, they're launching this bar that's made of insects. Would I want to be sponsored by them?
Yep.
And I was like, I'm really sorry, but it's just not something I would want to. Actually, I had one today. I had had somebody contact me through my website and said, we're launching a new brand, actually, but it's by an established manufacturer of beds. And they wanted me to give me like a free mattress because you know, talking about how important sleep is when you're an athlete, and I just said that really, you know, thank you so much for the offer, but I'm just not really willing to take on any anyone in that kind of space right now. So
really, well, yeah, okay. So I mean, I agree with you that sleeping is there, but what is it? What they were asking you to do with the bed?
No, not at all. No, I just. I don't want to dilute what I do, and I don't want to dilute the brands that I work with.
Okay.
And adding a bed, a manufacturer in there, you know, I've got a Tempur mattress actually anyway, so I've got a pretty decent one. But also, you know, I don't want to kind of just get silly with it. It's a lot to manage. And yeah. I do try and provide as much visibility as possible for my sponsors. I don't want to start getting ridiculous and adding random things like beds and paintings and, you know, random stuff for the home on my sponsors page.
No, but I mean, if BMW or Mercedes offered you a four-wheel drive, you might be taking that one on, I think.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But you've got a nice range of sponsors there. I see, you know, you've got wetsuits, you've got your local bike shop. I do think that's important these days because they're closing down like wildfire.
Definitely.
And I think it's as everybody searches for the cheap stuff at Wiggle, they forget that when they need the bike servicing and the local bike shop's gone, they're going to be stuck. You're at Champneys, so that's one of the original health spa names. I guess that just saves you a gym membership and allows you somewhere that you can go and swim at and use some post-race recovery facilities.
Yeah, the biggest benefit of that is not being subject to some opening times, pool, swimming pool opening times and lanes, because it's open from 6:30 in the morning until, I don't know, probably 10 o'clock at night, something like that, maybe half nine.
Yeah.
And it's not closed. I think there's one sort of little aqua session during the day and then the rest of the time the pool's open. So that is really actually a massive benefit.
Yeah, okay. And you've got, I know Daz and Debs at Tri Sports Lanzarote, you're one of their ambassadors. So what does that involve? Just the opportunity to stay there free of charge and do some publicity work for them?
Yeah, I pay a reduced rate. Yeah, I mean, I've stayed there pretty much every single year, maybe two or three times a year for the last 3 years. So it just offers a really nice base to train from, and you get all your food included, so you don't need to worry about anything.
Yeah, yeah,
it's just nice, you know, stumpy.
They have got a lovely setup there, haven't they? It's like sort of training with in luxury. You probably feel like a pro team when you're there. Okay, so some of the things then that you've talked about, you talked about loyalty, you talked about not diluting the service that you offer to those brands that are willing to support you. So, and clearly you have some rules and guidelines that you like to work to in order to make sure that the people that are providing you with products get good value for money. So what typically are they asking from you in order to promote their brand?
To be honest, I mean, most of my sponsors aren't demanding at all. So they don't really ask. I think it's just to kind of, it's an unspoken rule of mine. So either, you know, there was something in the early days that I offered and they said, yeah, that sounds great. And we've just maintained the momentum and maintained the relationship over the years. And some of them are a bit more, you know, they want regular content, but generally I will mention sponsors in blogs, and I try to do it in a way that isn't just really, you know, people just see right through it. It's really hard actually with product placement to not just like look like you're recommending a product because you get it for free. Yep. I mean, many of the products I used before, so Cherry Active is a long-term sponsor of mine. I use Cherry Active long before they sponsored me, and it's been recommended by every single nutritionist that I've ever worked with, which is about three different nutritionists. So it's just an incredible product, and I would only want to endorse products that I would pay to use.
Difficult to get Cherry Active into a blog without
exactly
going, yeah, hey, exactly, and doing some sort of cheesy commercial.
Yeah, it is hard. You know, you've got to find a bit more creative ways. I think social media is opening up these opportunities because you have things like Instagram Story, and it is you put trivial stuff on there. So you wouldn't necessarily want a permanent post, but you might just put like, oh, I'm going to have one of these after my training session. And then it goes after 24 hours. So you're drip feeding brand equity into your social activity, your social media activity, without it being too hard sell. So that's something I try to do. I am conscious of it, and I know it's not always possible. Sometimes you just do have to post a blatant sponsor promo post.
Yes.
and it is, you know, it's that challenge really of trying to find creative ways of weaving them into your lifestyle and you know the activities that you're doing throughout the sport.
So you've got Race Skin, you've got Zone 3, you've got Catlike, you've got Greepers, you've got your Sipo bike, you've got your Fast Forward wheel. So a photograph of you on your bike in your bike kit would probably cover about three or four of those sponsors. And if that was on Instagram, you just need to post a hashtag for them and maybe a link. So it doesn't even need to be the written word, does it?
Exactly.
It could be a photograph of you there, and people see you in that all the time. There could be a photograph of you wearing a Zone 3 t-shirt or doing a little video blog where you're wearing your Zone 3 t-shirt, but talking about swimming and not actually promoting their brand, but just being visible in their t-shirt for 4 or 5 minutes. You know, I do know from looking at some and seeing some of your posts that you are quite creative like that. And I think that is what Colin and the people that support you like as well, is that there's just some visibility and association there on a regular basis. What's the most creative and wacky thing that you've done to promote somebody's brand?
Oh, I don't think I've been that creative. I mean, you know, apart from posting images, like you say, the images of me on my bike does kind of tick a lot of boxes. I mean, I'm abroad a fair bit. I try to do during the winter. I think I did a training camp every month. somewhere warm because I'm not very good with a cold. And then people just think I have this really glamorous lifestyle, which is completely not true at all.
Because they don't see.
Yeah, I know. They only see the Instagram photos, though. They don't see the hours that I'm working on my laptop. But yeah, that's boring. That's boring content. I don't really post about that much.
Yeah, but you get the chance to go to Lanzarote and stay at that nice place there, not in a hotel. You get the opportunity to move your office temporarily to your room in Lanzarote and probably fix your work around your training. So it's what I call, you're probably what I would call a lifestyle entrepreneur, in that you're making your work work for you to fit in around the things you want to do in your life rather than be tied to one location. And that's what it seems like from the outside. Please correct me if it's not like that at all. But I know that there's an awful lot of people, pros included, I should imagine, that would like to have a lifestyle like that. And I know from what I do that having that lifestyle takes an awful lot of hard work to design it like that way and make it work. It hasn't just fallen into your lap, has it?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's pros and cons to everything. So I'm obviously not complaining that I'm sat there working while on training camp. I have the benefit of both worlds. And it is incredible. I feel very lucky that I have that opportunity. But yeah, I mean, I do work very hard. I went into freelance work about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And within a couple of months of being a freelancer, I registered a limited company. And things just kind of proliferated from there. And I've been very lucky that I've had a consistent workload, a consistent base of clients ever since, really. They've moved around a bit, but yeah, I've always been busy. And luckily, most of my clients are pretty understanding about my lifestyle, which means that when I do go away on training camps, I will always deliver to my clients. You know, it's never going to be, my work will never be compromised. But, you know, I might be dialing in from somewhere random every single time there's a conference call. So, yeah, it's a balance. But it does mean that there's a lot of hard work behind the scenes that people don't see. And, you know, I've become very accustomed to working on planes, at airports, and in between training sessions, I have to rush back to my laptop, answer all my emails, get some stuff done, show that I'm actually producing work, not just spending long hours in the sunshine on my bike. And it can be tiring as well, because you don't really get the opportunity to properly recover between sessions. And I'm there, I train with quite a few pros, and you know, they're off and they're saying, oh, I'm gonna go for a nap, and I'm feeling rather envious of them because I have to spend the next 3 hours hammering out emails. but it swings and roundabouts.
I think a lot of people think that the life of a pro triathlete is very glamorous, and you know, I know Alistair and Johnny Brownlee quite well, and the other members of the high performance team in Leeds. The training is mostly training and resting. They don't like travelling because it disrupts training. They obviously have managers of their business life that help them fix deals and sort all that stuff out. So they are really just focusing on training, but then they're the world's best. There's a lot of what I call second and third tier pros who've just turned that turned from being an age grouper into a pro, or just entered the pro world as an under 23 athlete that are struggling to make ends meet and are having to do work, and perhaps would look at your lifestyle and think, well, actually, it might be better as an age grouper there. You know, she doesn't have the pressures of being a pro, but she's earning a living and still training abroad and getting all the benefits that we get, but not having to make ends meet and struggling. It is a real balance, and you seem to have got it pretty much right. You know, I mean, standing on a tightrope balancing is never perfect balancing, is it? You're always going to be off balance occasionally and having to correct things, which is what it sounds like for you. But in terms of being an inspiration to the people who follow your blogs and look at your Instagram posts and read your stuff on Facebook, I would think that you are inspiring to an awful lot of triathletes, male and female. So my final question, Amy, to you, and it's not an easy one to answer, but there will be people looking at what you do and listening to this podcast who, let's say they're going to do their first Ironman, and it's an inspiring story. Maybe they've come back from illness, maybe they've overcome some massive obstacle in order to do this, or maybe they have qualified to race in Hawaii at the World Championships or in South Africa, and they think that they are worthy of some sponsorship. What insider tricks and tips can you give them to help them stand out from all the other people that are writing looking for a free bike or a free wetsuit?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One of my biggest pieces of advice would be to start local. If you haven't really got much of a footprint in the triathlon world so far, then starting local is always a good place to start, because, you know, that's where I started. I approached my local bike shop, and they're small businesses will look for a way in which they can increase their reach. And if they can help support somebody who, with a bit of a local footprint, then, you know, there's an opportunity for them there. The second thing, and it ties in with what I've just said there, is offer something back. So, I mean, every single time I've approached a potential sponsor, like my email to Colin, I actually wrote him a bullet point list of things that I could offer the brand. And because I understand marketing, obviously, it's easy for me to be able to recognize what a brand would look for. But actually, a lot of it's common sense. So, you know, I'm lucky that I have a little bit of a social media following. So that's something I can list as one of the benefits that I could bring a brand. And the other thing is, I mean, I never put results. I maybe mention if I qualify for a world championship, then that's a fairly big thing, but I never mention results because I don't have to. It's not all about results. I've actually helped some fellow pro triathletes write emails trying to look for bike sponsors, and you know, the email was just all about where she's come and all about placings. And I said I wouldn't emphasize that. I'd actually tell them what you can offer them, not just tell them you're going to be on the podium, because who cares? Actually, at the end of the day, who cares? You know, who actually sees the podium photos? Even if you're on a big major, you know, Ironman or Ironman 70.3 or challenge race podium, it goes in a news piece and then never gets seen again. So why would a brand actually care about that? What they want is consistent. And I think that's an important word to use, consistent engagement with their brand, and whether that's generated by you as an athlete. And then you spark conversations. So somebody's saying they're feeling tired and you're saying, oh, have you ever tried this? I use it. It's a supplement that helps me sleep better, recover better. You know, then something like that can actually help to generate conversation without just acting like a sales pitch. So I think offering something, starting local, and just go for it. Because, you know, I never in a million years thought I'd be a sponsored athlete. I used to find it quite hilarious that it had happened to me. But yeah, I think it's possible if you approach it the right way.
Well, and I guess that once people start to see the good work that you do, then that you gain some momentum. And like you mentioned earlier, you start to get people knocking at your door offering you stuff, and then it's a question of deciding what you want to go with, and what your criteria are for working with a brand. But you mentioned there about offering back, and how often emails or letters that come through start off with, I'm so-and-so, I've done this, I've done that. Mm-hmm. You know, if you sponsor me, I'll put your name on my suit. And Colin always says, who ever looks at the winner or the person finishing third in their age group on the podium coming across the line and says, oh, that reminds me, I must buy some race skin clothing. Nobody ever does that. Nobody ever looks at the podium photos. They look at people spraying, you know, Erdinger over each other or tipping champagne on each other. But nobody looks at the running shoes and goes, oh, yeah, Saucony, I'm going to change to them.
Yeah.
But they might see a blog post that resonates with them and read that, and then see something on the bottom that says you're sponsored by so-and-so. Or more importantly, they might hear you talking in conversation about where you go to get your physio, and you might recommend them. And because, you know, things like that are personal, that recommendation's worth gold dust.
Yeah, that's a massive thing, actually. And I get a lot of that nowadays. I had somebody literally the day before yesterday who emailed me and said, oh, what wetsuit do you wear? What do you recommend? And so obviously I said, I wear a Zone 3 Vanquish. I've been wearing it for 4 years. It's brilliant. So, you know, there's those kind of more subliminal kind of marketing messages that are tend to be just recommendations, peer-to-peer recommendations. But all of that stuff has value. And yep. some of the stuff that you'll be doing for a brand won't be seen. It'll be in the background. But like you say, you know, the more that you have a presence in the kind of the public space, then it just kind of generates momentum. And the more people you meet and the more people you talk to, feeds off from there.
I did a podcast with Louisa, who's my physio, and we talked about the value of having a full body MOT, if you like, and getting a bike fit. And I think since then, I think they've had 12 people book in for bike fits, 2.5 really? Hours each. Probably £150 per bike fit, but most of those people have come back and said, actually, this has been a great investment, so it was worthwhile going along. But that's 12 people that they probably wouldn't have got that have gone along as a result of a conversation that we recorded and just broadcast. And those people will tell their friends, and so that is subliminal. You know, it cost Louisa an hour of her time to come and chat with me. But I've helped her by broadcasting her story. She's done the hard work, but it's actually better marketing than putting an advert in a newspaper or in a local magazine.
Yeah, it's very targeted, and you're going to get people who are already engaged, and they're obviously listening to you because they value your opinion and value your guests' opinions. So yeah, you've already kind of got a captive audience.
Well, and that's the thing that I noticed about what you do also, Amy, is that you are now an influencer. And I think that's what brands these days are looking for. I met a guy in America last year who's got a massive presence on Instagram. He works as a brand ambassador. He really just trains. He has a few investments and he trains and posts photographs of himself all the time doing his CrossFit and climbing. But he's got support from, you know, Oakley, some mountain bike companies, some clothing companies. You know, he has a very nice lifestyle traveling around America, photographing himself. He's muscular, he's good looking, he seems to come out well on photographs, and a lot of people like that. But then, because he talks about these brands, he influences people's buying decisions. And I think you mentioned about how social media's changed all that. I think that's the opportunity for those people we were talking about to get sponsorship, is how can you leverage your influence within your little community to help some brands? And that for me would be the area I would be looking at if I wanted some sponsorship.
Yeah. So yeah, social media has opened up so many doors for brands and for consumers, right? Because, you know, we have visibility to new stuff that we wouldn't necessarily have known about before as buyers. But then, you know, the brands themselves also have an opportunity to leverage the networks of people who are active social media users. So yeah, it's great. I mean, I use it in both worlds. I'm actually looking at 4 influencers for one of my clients at the moment. So none of it's triathlon related. It's all a bit off-piste industries. But yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah, good. Well, Amy, we talked about the areas where you are visible on social media. Would you like to tell our listeners where they can follow your story?
Yeah, basically my website is probably the best place to go. It's amykilpin.co.uk. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just find me, Amy Kilpin or A Kilpin.
Cool. And if you are traveling through an airport and you see a blonde lady there with a bike and lots of sponsors logos on it, it's probably Amy, so please go and say to her hello to her and add to the list of people that she bumps into in weird places.
Yeah, I might even buy you coffee.
Cool. Right, well, I'll be in Manchester airport in 2 weeks. Be there.
I'll try.
Okay, well, Amy Kilpin, entrepreneur, lifestyle entrepreneur, social media expert, sponsored age group triathlete, thank you very much for being a guest today. It's been a great conversation. I appreciate you sharing your time. Anything you'd like to say to listeners before you go?
No, I would just like to say thanks to you, Simon, for inviting me on. I'm honoured.
No, it's a pleasure. The honour is all mine, Amy. So listeners, I am also honoured that you choose to join us every week. There's plenty of podcasts out there that you could choose to listen to, but you choose to listen to ours. So I'm eternally grateful for that. And we will be back in future weeks with more great guests. So from me and Amy, Thank you for listening. Bye for now. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon, 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.